The impact of the impeachment trial and President Trump's acquittal. President Trump has declared himself totally vindicated after the U.S. Senate formally acquitted him yesterday. Speaking at a news conference in the past hour, he called the whole process wrong, saying, quote, "It was evil, it was corrupt, it was dirty cops." Maine's U.S. senators divided their votes. Senator Susan Collins joined every Republican except Mitt Romney in voting for acquittal. Senator King voted to remove President Trump from office. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will discuss the decision by the Senate, how this fits into U.S. history, and what the impeachment trial and ultimate acquittal means for the future of our country. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Of course, we have been listening to President Trump's public comments in reaction to his acquittal by the U.S. Senate, and listening to some analysis of that. Now, we are going to continue that analysis with some perspective from two of our favorite guests here in the studio with me, Ron Schmidt. You know Ron as a professor of political science at the University of Southern Maine. His most recent book is Reading Politics with Machiavelli. And on the line with us from his home in New York City is Kenneth C. Davis. He is the author of the Don't Know Much About History books, and he has written an article about the history of impeachment for Smithsonian Magazine. We have a link to that article on our website and on our Facebook page. Kenneth, Ron, welcome back to Maine Calling.
Thanks for having me.
Hello, Jennifer. Always a pleasure to be with you, even at a distance.
Thank you. I know we'd rather you here, but, you know, it's not the best weather today. So as always, though, we want to hear from you and the audience. Have you been following this all very closely? Did anything surprise you? Do you have questions for our experts? You can email us, talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. That's a different number than our pledge phone number. So if you'd like to call Maine Calling, I'm going to give it one more time, 1-800-399-3566. Ron, we've been sitting in the studio as the president has been responding, I guess, not just responding to the allegations, but also kind of holding a pep rally of supporters. What is your reaction to the tone of the last hour?
Well, the tone is very much in keeping with the president's usual mode of address to the public and to supporters. His speeches have a tendency to sound like rallies, even when he's not actually at a rally. But the level of personal invective, the sort of saturation in grievance, and the obsession with somewhat conspiratorial talking points are all sort of ordinary for this particular president. I guess in a sense, if he really does see the outcome in the trial yesterday as an exoneration, the overall tone was so aggrieved that it's hard to really see it as the kind of celebration that he wants to be positing.
All right. Ken, what about you? What's your response, reaction?
Well, the words that jump out for me as listening to it, and I was listening to it, not watching it over the feed, you know, the words that jump out were sick, evil, scum, in reference to, you know, people within the FBI, his political opponents, and the word invective that Ron just uses is perfectly appropriate. But I guess at this point, we should not be surprised anymore. As again, as Ron just said, this is the style of this president. A few years ago, however, just after his election, I was at an event where Andrew Sullivan, the writer, said, you should remain shocked. And I guess that's one of the things I always take away from hearing this, is that we are some of us have lost the ability to remain shocked, but this is still fairly shocking coming from the president of the United States in this, I guess pep rally is the only way to describe it. He certainly seems not to have learned any lessons, as the esteemed senator from Maine suggested he had.
You know, I want to ask the big question here. Ron Schmidt, does this acquittal strengthen or weaken President Trump's presidency?
That's an excellent question. I'm teaching a course right now on the presidency. And in discussing the modern presidency, say from the Second World War on, the kind of basic textbook was written by a guy, one of the founders of the Kennedy School at Harvard, named Richard Neustadt. And Neustadt suggested that presidents really are only as powerful as their ability to win tomorrow's struggle. That for presidents, the presidency is an ongoing political campaign in which you need to convince other people with power in Washington and other centers of power that it'll be easier for them to do their jobs if they work with you in doing your job. And that for that to work, they have to believe that you will keep your promises and that you'll keep your threats and that the American people take you seriously. If you lose that, you lose the ability to get them to work with you. Donald Trump has sort of stymied that argument in a wide variety of ways since he assumed the White House. We have to acknowledge that his major legislative accomplishments have been things that the Republican Party wanted to do anyway, the tax bill and the conservatives on the judiciary, and that some of his obsessions have never emerged really outside of his speeches at rallies. From that standpoint, he hasn't been a particularly powerful president, and we shouldn't expect him to be now. But from the other standpoint, the way in which the Republican Party has remained lockstep behind him suggests that even if they don't necessarily believe he'll be effective at pushing legislation, and he doesn't seem to be interested in governing, he will keep his threats, and that is enough to worry them into staying in formation.
Ken, you're a historian and have looked at impeachments past. How does the question of whether or not this impeachment and acquittal strengthens or weakens a president, how does this compare with the two others?
Well, of course, the two other situations involved presidents who were in their, Clinton in his second term and Andrew Johnson certainly not going to be returning to the presidency. So it's a very different situation in many respects. Bill Clinton did go on to continue and complete a fairly successful second term in some respects, not so successful in other respects. And certainly the country was, you know, extremely distracted. But that impeachment, I think, colored many people's impression of impeachment. And of course, the article that you mentioned that I wrote for Smithsonian begins with the famous dictum of Gerald Ford, then a member of the House of Representatives, who said an impeachable offense is anything a majority of the House of Representatives thinks it is. So that has been confirmed once again. I do think that this impeachment was very different from the Clinton impeachment. So we're, as we have been for 3 years, in very, very untested waters in terms of a presidency. We've never seen or had a presidency quite like this, and we seem to be setting new precedents all the time. From the historical perspective about impeachment, and we won't know this for a very long time, I think that the real danger was that the Senate broke precedent, certainly, by not calling witnesses. And that was clearly, the result of a partisan majority in the Senate deciding that it was going to do what was best for itself, not what was necessarily best for the institution of the Congress and its and the systems of checks and balances that Congress is supposed to have over the president, and certainly was more in the interests of this president than his party.
I want to get to the point and talk. Oh, go ahead, Ron.
I think that's an excellent point. And what I find really striking about this case in comparison with, say, the Watergate case is what Mitch McConnell and the Republicans thought was in their best interest. One of the things that really hurt Richard Nixon in the smoking gun tape is that conservatives in the Republican Party in the Senate realized that he had lied to them and that they were going to look like fools because they had been repeating stories that he knew were not true. And in that case, they felt because they worried about retribution from their voters or from history or from their public prestige that they would suffer if they didn't break with him. It's striking to me that this Senate's Republicans, who have the political instincts of any of the previous ones, did not see that as crippling to their self-interest, but rather as sticking with President Trump despite that.
On the line with us now, Maine Public senior political correspondent Mal Leary. Mal, thanks so much for joining us for just a few minutes here. I know that Senator Collins has spoken with you several times throughout the impeachment process. Ken Davis just mentioned Senator Collins a minute ago. Collins has been in the spotlight throughout this process, but especially now after her comments to reporters in the past couple of days, in which she talked about the president, quote, learning a lesson from this process. Mal, talk about the evolution of the senator's comments.
Well, I think it's important to point out that most of her comments throughout this whole period went back to the 1999 impeachment of President Clinton, which she was a freshman member of the Senate at the time. And she kept going back to that as her bedrock, saying, they called witnesses, we should call witnesses. Which, of course, got her into some trouble with Mitch McConnell when she pushed, along with some other moderate senators, if you will, within the Republican caucus to require an up or down vote on whether there would be witnesses called. They had the vote, and she lost. So she ended up having to make this decision based on the record that was developed in the House entirely without any, as I think one of your guests just pointed out, without any witnesses, which was a break from the past Senate proceedings, and not just in presidential impeachments, but impeachment of judges and other federal officials. There's always been witnesses called by the Senate in the trial phase.
But Mal, this whole comment that she made, that she believed, first she said, tell me if I'm misquoting her, she believed that President Trump would learn a lesson, and then she said that what she wished she had said is that she hopes President Trump learns a lesson. And she's actually said both things to you, correct?
Absolutely. She started off with, the learning a lesson. She thought he had learned a lesson from this and then had to backtrack 2 days later, I believe, saying, well, I was wrong. Basically, he says he hasn't, so maybe I should have said what I was hoping he would learn a lesson as opposed to actually learning one. This is a long history here. You got to remember that editorial that Senator Collins wrote in 2016, where she said flatly that he was unfit to be elected president and wasn't going to vote for him as the Republican nominee. So we've got a long history here of Collins battling with Trump on some issues, even though on many issues, she has supported him.
How do you think the voters of Maine will react to Senator Collins' vote to acquit?
I think it'll be the same as we've seen with other major controversial issues. She's got some phone calls in, people saying they support her, people saying they oppose her. I think that's what it's going to be. The same way we had with her support for Kavanaugh to be on the Supreme Court. She lost support with some people. She picked up some support with some people. So I don't know if there's going to be any great change in the way voters decide how they're going to vote because of this particular instance. I mean, I've always been told by folks like the gentleman you have on as guests that, the process by which individual voters decide how they're going to vote is incredibly complex and usually takes up many issues, including some very difficult ones to assess, like, but do they believe the person? Do they think the person's doing the right thing? And if that happens, they may vote for the person even though they disagree with them on particular issues. So how is it going to play out in the end? We don't even know who's running against her yet. So there's going to be a lot of factors come into play.
Mal Leary, thank you so much for taking some time with us. That's Mal Leary, Maine Public's senior political correspondent. Kenneth Davis, every step of this process, Collins, as Mal mentioned, has drawn parallels with the Clinton impeachment, and she did so again yesterday in the press release announcing her vote. Is that an apt comparison? Oh, shoot. I lost Ken. I just hung up on him by mistake. So hopefully we'll get Ken back. And let me turn to you, Ron, and ask you then instead. I want to ask about what Mal was talking about how this kind of thing affects voters. You know, there's a lot of anger out there. A lot of people, I see it on social media. We see the calls coming into the station. We see a lot of people angry at Susan Collins. Are these people who were not going to vote for her anyway, or are these people who have voted for her in the past who will not vote for her in the future?
Maine voters, and I'm always wary of generalizations, but Maine voters seem to respect a particular degree of independence, or of the idea of people who can make political decisions without too much concern about party, and to have a very pragmatic approach to politics. And that's enabled Senator Collins to cobble together a coalition of electoral support for a while now that's included Democrats and it's included independents. And even if the Kavanaugh confirmation had not gone the way that it did, even if this trial had not taken place, that kind of performance is just more difficult now with the degree to which the parties are separated on terms of policy and style and commitment to their reading of the Constitution and everything. That, of course, is not the case now. We've had the Kavanaugh confirmation hearings. We've had the trial and the impeachment. It is certainly possible that Senator Collins would be able to hold on to part of a big part of her old electoral base. She's done it before. She's very good at that. And I think Maine voters are open to that argument. But it's going to be considerably more difficult. It depends, I think, on, as Mal suggested, on who she winds up facing in the general election and on the steps that she takes in the campaign.
And I'm so sorry, Ken Davis, I hung up on you a minute ago, but I wanted to ask you, you know, throughout this process, Senator Collins has compared this to the Clinton impeachment because, you know, as was mentioned, she was a freshman senator at the time. Are the comparisons apt? Is Senator Collins, for example, saying, look, the bar is very high. The bar to vote to remove someone from office is very high. And in both cases, she determined that she didn't believe that the person had met that bar. Are those apt comparisons?
I think that she's correct in the sense that the bar is set very high. The founders did not want to make this too easy for a partisan Congress to remove a president, particularly one from another party. So that is why, even though it just takes the simple majority in the House, it takes the supermajority in the Senate to actually remove the president from office. So the bar is high constitutionally. To make that comparison then between the Clinton impeachment and this impeachment, I think begs some very important questions, and obviously people will be arguing this for a long time. In the case of Bill Clinton, it was a case of his having perjured himself in a civil deposition. In this case, we had the president being accused of the abuse of powers of his office, his very extremely powerful abuse of those powers. So I don't think that the two impeachments in essence are comparable. Yes, the bar is very high, but I don't think that these two impeachments were remotely comparable in the degree of the seriousness of the charges that the House had brought. This was a case where we were talking about fundamental assault on the American electoral system, an assault on the power of the president to withhold duly constituted funds going to an ally battling in an active hot war. And so the stakes, it seems to me, are much higher in this case than they were in Bill Clinton's case, where you certainly had questions, legitimate questions of propriety, law, the dignity of the office, and the fact of perjury, a civil perjury. But this case was exactly what the founders feared most, the ability of a president with extraordinary powers to use those powers for personal and political gain. And I think that was at the heart of this impeachment that sets it apart.
We have lots of calls and emails coming in, and we will get to those in just a minute. But first, going to take a brief break for fundraising. We're talking about the impeachment process on Maine Calling.
Maine Calling is made possible by Patriot Subaru in Saco, with the all-wheel symmetrical drive Subaru designed to help keep Mainers safe all winter. Patriot Subaru. By Breakwater, curiosity for life, offering exceptional day school and after-school options for toddlers through 8th grade. BreakwaterLearning.org. And by Evergreen Home Performance, dedicated to helping homeowners qualify for efficiency main energy audit and insulation rebates. More at EvergreenYourHome.com.
Well, the coverage of important live news events, followed by analysis of those events and your opportunity to comment on them. That's what we are packaging for you today. Hello, I'm Erwin Gratz, local anchor for Morning Edition here at Maine Public Radio. Welcome as we take a brief break from Maine Calling to talk about the important business of public radio. What makes all of this coverage possible? Nora Flaherty, it's those folks who call in.
Absolutely. You're the one. You make important news coverage and analysis possible. We don't just bring you the national broadcast. We don't just bring you the NPR analysis, but we do bring you those things. And then we're bringing you Maine Calling as well, and your chance to weigh in on what's going on around the country. This is an incredibly vital moment for American politics and for politics here in Maine. I don't think we've ever been quite this wrapped up in the national story as we are right now. And we are here for you during this time, helping you understand and drive the story about what's going on in Maine. The number to call to support that coverage and to support your playing a role in it is 800-866-1475. Online, if you're listening online now, you can give at mainepublic.org.
That's right. And when you call in, it takes just a couple of minutes of your time. If you do it right now, we've got some volunteers standing by in Portland, or the online website only takes a couple of minutes of your time, and you'll be able to get back to Maine Calling when we'll be hearing more from our experts and also from the folks who are calling in. Think about the difference that public radio news makes to you. Think about the important information you glean from it, the important balance it provides for your news coverage. If this is valuable to you, then this is your moment to call. 1-800-866-1475 or online, mainepublic.org.
Again, mainepublic.org, 800-866-1475. When you call, even if you're already a member, have your credit card or bank information ready. That is the most convenient way to give. It'll get you done as fast as possible. You know, it's hard for me right now to express how vital public radio is for my information and for my sort of everyday life. I was away last week in New York City, and every conversation led to Maine, led to Maine politics, led to Susan Collins and the impeachment and what's going on in Maine and around the country. I am well informed about what's going on because of Maine Public Radio. If that's your situation as well, if you value that, now's the time to show that financially by giving at mainepublic.org, 800-866-1475.
You know, there are many ways, of course, for you to give. You can make a one-time contribution. You can become one of our evergreen friends here at Maine Public Radio. And you can make a monthly, set up a monthly gift. When you do something like that, do have a credit card or your bank information ready when you call. And by the way, for $15 a month as an Evergreen friend, we will also include a year's digital subscription to the New York Times, another great journalistic institution, along with public radio, providing you with some of the best news coverage there is. But we can't do that here in public radio without you. So do give us that call, 1-800-866-1475, or go online to mainepublic.org.
The majority of funding for Maine Public comes from our community, more than 70%. Again, I keep using the word vital. Your support is vital, and what we do, I think, for the Maine community is vital to our civil society. The number to call to support that very serious proposition is 800-866-1475. mainepublic.org.
You're listening to listener-supported Maine Public Radio over these stations, WMEH Bangor 90.9,
WMEA Portland 90.1,
WMEP Camden 90.5,
WMEM Presque Isle 106.1,
WMED Calais 89.7,
WMEW Waterville 91.3,
and WMEF Fort Kent 106.5.
You are, of course, also listening online at mainepublic.org, maybe on our app. The way to give is at mainepublic.org or by calling 800 800-866-1475. We'll be returning to Maine Calling in just a moment. More analysis of what's going on in our country and our state. We'll be back for yet more analysis later today on All Things Considered. This is what we do. We do a good job, and we thank you for your support. Again, 800-866-1475, mainepublic.org.
Or I was going to say, or online at mainepublic.org. Again, think about what this service is worth to you, and then remember that it does not happen without you, without people just like you, without your family, friends, many of whom are already members of public radio, as are those couple of people you've heard call during this break. Thank you if you have called in your pledge. Thank you, please, for being next at 800-866-1475 or online at mainepublic.org. And thank you.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and today we are talking about the impeachment and acquittal of Donald Trump. My guest today, USM political science professor Ron Schmidt, and don't know much about history author Kenneth C. Davis. I invite you to join the conversation. The phone number is different than our pledge phone number. Listen up, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll go to Dennis, who's calling from Mercer, Maine. Dennis has been waiting a while. Thank you so much, Dennis, and go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I was just wondering what the experts thought of this proposition, that the problem may not be the height of the bar, but the nature of the remedy, impeachment itself may just be too big, too unwieldy as a punishment, and too sort of unnatural to the nature of a democracy, at least our democracy. I know that back in the Clinton era, they talked a lot about the Clinton impeachment, there were suggestions that the president might be fined or something, but that was rejected as a bill of attainder. Given those limitations, what else besides impeachment might
Dennis, thank you so much for your question. Ron, I know at some point people were discussing censure. Do you think if the discussion had been not about impeachment but about censure that we may have seen a different result?
Well, first of all, Dennis, thank you for your question. I think that's very appropriate to the moment. Impeachment is not an extremely effective means of restraining a problematic president. Those of us of a certain age, I think, may have overestimated the ability of impeachment to bring presidents to heel because of the way that President Nixon resigned rather than face it. That being said, though, I don't know that censure would really affect much, especially in the case of a president who prides himself on the idea that the second article of the Constitution lets him do whatever he wants. It may be at the end that elections are really the only most effective way of dealing with out-of-control executives. But when those executives are targeting the election process themselves, that becomes very concerning.
Ken, thoughts?
Just to add a historical note that only one president has yet been censured. That was Andrew Jackson after he had, I believe it was involving the breakup of the bank. And the next Senate then came in and removed the censure. So it was, the mildest of slaps on the wrist that was then quickly removed, and most people wouldn't even remember to this day, except for people like me who think about these things, that Andrew Jackson was once censured by the Senate. So I think it would have been it might have gotten a few more votes perhaps than the impeachment vote did, but I'd still be very leery of the notion that this Senate would have censured this president with the Republican majority intact. Also, on a historical note, while I get a chance to do this, I go back to, because we have a president's birthday coming up that we still mark as a holiday. It's not President's Day, it's George Washington's birthday. Looking back at George Washington's farewell address, which really should be a kind of staple for anyone who's interested in the presidency and in our republic to go back and read. In 1796, 124 years ago, he wrote about two things being really dangerous. One was the baneful effect of party, and he was really concerned more about geographical parties, but he really believed that this was this idea of faction, as they called it, was one that was very, very dangerous for this, to the spirit of the Republic. And the other one that he referred to as also baneful was the complications of being involved with foreign governments and getting foreign governments to do what you wanted them to do, or them doing what they wanted you to do. So it's remarkable that 224 years later, the two things that Washington most warned against are the things that are really biting us in the tail right now.
I'm going to go to Richard on Facebook. He writes, he'll still go down in history as being impeached. And I want to contrast that with something that I believe it was Kellyanne Conway who is saying that he has been acquitted forever. Ken, which is it?
Well, both are true. And so it's really a matter of, you know, how you see the glass. He will be impeached forever, as Bill Clinton is. People who like and admire Bill Clinton say, yeah, he was impeached, but he was acquitted, and he shouldn't have been impeached in the first place. I suspect there will be many people who support President Trump and say, yeah, he was impeached, but he was acquitted and he shouldn't have been impeached in the first place. So, this notion that he'll be impeached forever, while technically true, I just think it's kind of an empty sentiment.
Thoughts, Ron?
I think in order for the idea of you're impeached forever to have a real effect on a president, that person has to see the presidency as a position of some sort of intrinsic dignity that you try to aspire to. And I don't believe our president does.
Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Would love to know what you're thinking about, talking about, as you follow the news of both the impeachment process, the president's acquittal, and then his comments afterwards, his comments just a couple hours ago, not even a couple hours ago. Nicholas on Facebook asks, Ron, how will our institutions recover from this?
I don't know, Nicholas. Thank you for asking the question. Our institutions have survived an enormous amount and they adapt and change. But we're definitely in a moment. I think for me, the sort of tipping point where I just entered a zone of confusion, was Senator McConnell's choice to not forward the nomination of Merrick Garland, in regard to the Supreme Court. That seemed like, to use a phrase from another fight, a nuclear option. In my classes, we talk a lot about Federalist 51 and Madison's argument that the ambition of individuals is mapped onto the ambition of constitutional offices. And that was an argument that was in part countering arguments by anti-federalists like Cato, who were saying that senates and presidents would be too cozy together because they share important powers, that would create a kind of affinity that would endanger the integrity of the two separate institutions. And I'm at a point now where I'm not sure that I would bet Madison's argument against Cato's.
Ken?
I would say that for most of my professional life as a historian, I took the view that America had certainly survived extraordinary moments. And even till recently, I said this, that we have survived much more divisive moments, including a war that killed 2% of the population a little over 150 years ago. So we've been in much darker moments. I'm old enough to remember very well what 1968 and 1969 looked like, and cities were burning, and students were being shot on campuses, and that was a pretty dark moment when we were also wondering, would the institution survive? And I basically had took the long view that yes, the institutions survive. That one of the things that makes America exceptional is that in 200 plus years, we have never had a strongman. In our two greatest crises, the Civil War and then the Great Depression and World War II, our nation brought forth Abraham Lincoln and FDR, whereas Italy brought forth Mussolini and Germany brought forth Hitler. So the notion that America was exceptional in that sense was a kind of bomb to me. I feel that something profound has changed, and I think that Ron's point about the tremendous breach of precedent in not even hearing, let alone approving, a president's nominee to the Supreme Court was a fundamental shift, one in a series of incremental shifts. Last year, around this time, 44 former senators said that there were some real problems in America, that there were attacks on the institutions of our democracy. And I fear that we are there right now, and I agree with them completely. So I'm not as optimistic as I used to be about America's future and about the future of these institutions, unless the people really get up and say, we're not going to have that.
A couple comments from our audience. Elaine on Twitter says, regarding Collins' statement, she later said that it was aspirational. Can you believe that? Twisting herself into knots to stick with her team, not her constituents. In an email, Jim from Wayne says, the hearings before the Intelligence Committee showed us one of the very good faces of Americans serving America, Republican or Democrat. We care about our mission to make the world better and safer. Several of those people have been forced out or resigned in the aftermath. Even if many don't like the president, the Republican majority has gone along just as many of the founders of the country worried about a governance under a party system. We're getting what we want, so don't object. To both of your points earlier, if you would like to join the conversation, our phone number 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. We'd love to have a tweet at Maine Calling or an email, talk@mainepublic.org. Do that quickly, though, because we're coming toward the end of the program, and we are going to take a quick break now for some more of our winter pledge drive, but we will be back.
Local support comes from Dead River Company, committed to keeping Maine homes and businesses warm and proud to be a part of celebrating Maine's bicentennial. DeadRiver.com. By Maine Masonic Charitable Foundation, supporting Maine Public Radio's efforts to provide knowledge, wisdom, and entertainment to the people of Maine. And by Breakwater, Curiosity for Life, offering exceptional day school and after school options for toddlers through 8th grade. BreakwaterLearning.org.
Hi, and thanks for joining us for our Grow Together Winter Membership Drive. I'm Mark Simpson, News Director here at Maine Public, and I'm delighted to be joined by the fabulous Patty White.
Hey, Mark.
Patty, great to have you here with us. And, of course, we're asking here, what can you give to help Maine Public stay strong as we are covering important issues throughout the day? The way to do that is by picking up the phone and calling 1-800-866-1475. You can always go to mainepublic.org. Fascinating conversation we're having right now on Maine Calling, and it's these kind of current in-the-moment conversations, news, and analysis that we love to bring you here at Maine Public, and I hope that's why you're listening and why you'll give in support of Maine Public right now. That number again, 800-866-1475 or mainepublic.org.
Yeah, it's just a quick phone call, but it makes a huge difference because we're public radio. We're supported by listeners just like you. And as Mark said, we are always pivoting to bring you the important coverage that you want to hear. Maine Calling is discussing the impeachment analysis on, you know, the history of impeachment and what's been happening in Congress. We've shifted away from regular programming to bring you live coverage of the hearings. This is what public radio does for you. If that's something that you appreciate, then please call 1-800-866-1475 and become a member.
You know, that's the incredible thing is the staff here is really riding this wave. We're responding as things are happening, as developments occur. This is what we do in the news business every day, Patty. It just so happens that at this moment it's on a larger national scale and we're responding in that way. But really, that's what our local reporters and our hosts do, what the board ops do. Everybody who is involved in these broadcasts really pulls together to make it a successful operation. And we hope that you value this important public service and that you'll keep it strong here on this blustery day here in Maine. 800-866-1475, mainepublic.org. You can give online as well. We're here with the room of volunteers who are taking calls and eager to help out. And we know you're eager to help out as well by picking up that phone. 1-800-866-1475 or mainepublic.org.
And, you know, public radio is where you tune in to get great local coverage of the news. You know, on Maine Calling, you're hearing, local perspectives on what's happening nationally, but also our reporters are working every day to bring you stories, either kind of localizing national stories or telling you about other stories happening in Maine. If you appreciate that coverage, that Maine-specific coverage, then call 1-800-866-1475 or go online to mainepublic.org. Make a pledge, support public radio.
I have to give a shout out locally here. I'm the news director. News is my department, and I'm delighted to work with journalists like you, Patty White, but we have such an incredible pool of talent on our team, really areas of specialty that you focus on, in particular health. We look at wildlife, aquatic issues, natural land issues, state government. We have a crack team up there in Augusta. Our editors are great, and really, when you call 1-800-866-1475, you're supporting this incredible team of local journalists, award-winning, I have to say, at that as well. MainePublic.org, this incredible team brings you great public service journalism each and every day here. 1-800-866-1475.
The journalists here, we're passionate about what we do. We want to tell stories that mean something to you, and your funding makes it possible. You make programs that you hear on the airwaves every single day possible when you pledge your support. You can do that when you call 1-800-866-1475 or go online to mainepublic.org. And the great thing about public radio is that you decide how much you want to contribute.
Yes.
So you put a dollar value to what public radio brings you, what investment is worth it. I mean, maybe it's a one-time gift of $30. Maybe you want to become an Evergreen member, do $10 a month.
Incredible. 1-800-866-1475. You know, the weather out there, we're in the middle of winter in Maine. It's a little bit rough. Maybe you need something to cover that head of yours. Well, we've got a great pom-pom hat, Maine Public. It's got our colors on it for $10 a month. If you're able to give it that level, that'd be wonderful. We also have a non-pom version. It's gray. Universal fits in, perhaps with the sky this time of year. That's for $7.50 a month. You could give it that level. So maybe you need something to keep your head nice and warm. Keep all that important knowledge and information under the cover there. 800-866-1475 or mainepublic.org. Ways you can give and ask about those hats.
Yeah, and we also have socks.
That's right.
So if you want to be covered kind of head to toe with Maine Public or public radio garb, we've got it. You can go online to mainepublic.org to see ways that we would like to thank you for becoming a member. It doesn't take very long, but it makes a huge difference. Call 1-800-866-1475. There are other gifts too. I mean, we've got all kinds of tech offerings now. We've got some digital speaker or wireless speakers. We have webcam covers. So many things to check out. MainePublic.org. Please consider calling now, 1-800-866-1475. We'll still take calls even when we go back to the program. Volunteers are standing by. Your pledge makes a difference.
1-800-866-1475, MainePublic.org, as we get ready to go back to Maine Calling. And thanks.
Thanks.
Local support comes from Green Hut Galleries with Focus Printmaking 3, a printmaking group show February 6th through March 28th. GreenHutGalleries.com. And by BCM Environmental and Land Law, announcing a merger with Thomas R. Hannon Associates. More on their Vermont, New Hampshire, and Maine practice at NHLandLaw.com.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, we are talking about the impeachment proceedings and the acquittal of the president. My guests are historian and best-selling author Kenneth C. Davis and USM political science professor Ron Schmidt. You can join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. We're going to go up to Yarmouth and Ross. Hi, Ross. Go ahead.
Hi, Jen. Thanks for taking my call. During the trial, I was very distressed to hear an audio tape purportedly of the president talking to Lev Parnas, a man he claims never to have met. And during the conversation, the name Marie Yovanovitch came up, and he said, quote unquote, he says, okay, take her out, okay? And the next clip that I heard a few hours later was he's talking about Mohammed bin Salman, the way we took out this monster. And he's using the same phrase, take him out, to describe both a Iranian general and our own U.S. ambassador. That's very distressing to me.
Ross, thanks.
Thanks for taking my comment.
Yeah, thank you for your call. And I'm going to turn to you, Kenneth Davis, and ask you, about the historical perspective on this, the kind of language the president uses and the way in which he talks about political moves. Is this unprecedented, or is it just because we don't have tape recordings of earlier presidents that we don't know about it?
Well, we have more tape recordings than now than we knew we had in the past, but there's a new level of, again, the invective and the style and the approach of this president. The language is quite different than other presidents. Although certainly Richard Nixon and Lyndon Johnson, who were both in the Navy, not coincidentally, could talk like sailors, and they did. So it's really I think that the caller's getting at something different than just either salty language or invective. And Nixon was famous for his enemies and getting rid of his enemies, and that's why he resigned his office eventually. I do want to add one thing, because someone else commented about institutions, and it made me think of Ambassador Yovanovitch. And she writes in the Washington Post today, Yovanovitch, forgive me, and I think it's an important piece to read. She writes in the Washington Post opinion page today, and she actually answered a question that one of the callers has, because she says, I thought our institutions would forever protect us against individual transgressors, but it turns out that our institutions need us as much as we need them. They need the American people to protect them, or they will be hollowed out over time. So the very woman that the subject of the phone call is writing today in response to the fact that she was attacked and attacked unmercifully. We have seen in some of the other comments, and certainly in some of the references to Rudolph Giuliani and this crowd of people he had around him, you know, references to mob boss and the idea that you do somebody a favor, because hearkening back to the Godfather. This is a different level. Of course, presidents have always traded favors, but this was is a different level of something that does get at more of what we would call in other contexts racketeering. And so I think that that's where the real difference in the language is. And I would agree with the caller. I mean, to hear the president say, take her out, you know, that can be interpreted different ways. But from this president, it does have a clearly more threatening tone. And the ambassador herself said that she felt very threatened, even as she was testifying and was being attacked publicly by the president through tweet.
And Ron, I want to turn to you with this discussion about what this does for institutions, or to institutions. You teach young adults. You teach people who are in their young 20s. What is their view, having grown up when they did, of the institutions in this country?
I mean, I find more faith in the ability of our political system to work well if we commit to it in my students than I do in the general population. I am heartened by my students' commitments to ideas like public interest or like public service. And this includes students of a wide variety of ideologies. I've got students who are Republicans and Democrats who run for office and who I think are very committed to the system, which I find very heartening. I'd like to thank Ross for bringing that up, because that's an excellent observation. Since the 80s, at least, we've had presidents and other political leaders heap a lot of contempt on the idea of public service, on our public institutions, on government. Our word republic comes from Latin, meaning the public thing, and it's increasingly difficult to find leading politicians who will praise the public thing. And I'm heartened by the fact that my students do.
We're going to go to Sally, who's calling from York. Hi, Sally. Go ahead.
Hi. Listening to the president's speech this morning, at least once he said, we must never let this happen to again or to somebody, you know, again. And I'm just wondering, how would somebody be able to stop the process of being impeached other than doing the right thing?
All right, Sally, thanks for your question. Thoughts, Ron?
That's a good question. One excellent way for this to not happen is to not threaten your own ambassadors and try to withhold congressionally mandated spending. Other than that, I mean, the Constitution gives the power of impeachment to the House and the power of a Senate trial to the Senate. So without without changing the Constitution. You could try to call out whistleblowers like Senator Paul. You could try to intimidate people, but the Constitution sets up this process.
Ken?
I agree completely, and you know, I don't know that the next Congress that is confronted by a situation like this, or even somewhat like this, or completely different, but still rising to this level of serious concern, is going to be either frightened away by this experience, or perhaps say, the Democrats did the right thing. We have to keep doing this. This is how the Constitution gives Congress some check over the extraordinary powers of the presidency. This was one of the chief aims of the framers of the Constitution, not to give one of the three branches an excessive amount of power. We've seen over many years the power shift towards the presidency. You know, in the 19th century, the president was, you know, not the powerful man he is today, perhaps someday a woman. But this real swing certainly has started in the 20th century and accelerated, got pulled back a little bit after Watergate. But the example of the War Powers Act and the use of this military agreement that is now nearly 20 years old to grandfather in actions all over the world is a perfect example of how Congress really abrogated a lot of its responsibility. And it's going to take powerful congressional leadership to rein that back in. But right now we have a Congress that is much more happy, at least on the Senate side, to go along with this president and his aims.
Ron, does this, and just some final thoughts here, do you think we're going to learn a lot in the next 10 years? I mean, is this going to mean that Congresses of the future are going to be afraid to go down the impeachment road? Or do you think this is opening a can of worms where we're going to see impeachments all the time?
I don't know that future Congresses would be afraid to go forward with this, but they might find this discouraging in regard to its efficacy. But to figure that out, we're going to have to see what happens in November.
All right. Well, thank you both so much for being here and for staying late. We started late because of the president's address. The voice you just heard, Ron Schmidt, a professor of political science at USM, and his most recent book is Reading Politics with Machiavelli. Also joining us today, Kenneth C. Davis, the author of the Don't Know Much About History books. His most recent book is More Deadly Than War, The Hidden History of the Spanish Flu and the First World War. George Thomas ran the board today. Sandra Harris took your calls. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as links and resources, and Kenneth's article in the Smithsonian at mainecalling.org. Today's show will be broadcast again tonight at 8. Maine Calling is produced by Cindy Hahn and Jonathan Smith. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.